Thank you for listening to this sermon recorded at the Lost River Church of Christ. For more information, check out our website at lostriverchurch.org or call us at 270-843-3163. We consider it an honor to share the good news of Jesus Christ with you completely free of charge. Have a great day and enjoy the sermon.
Morning. It is a wonderful blessing again to be together this Lord's Day. It's great to look out and see each and every one of you. You all mean such a great deal to me. I've had a great weekend with many of the young people from this congregation. Janice and I, along with several others, put together a camp, and many of the young people here attend that, and it's been a joy to be with them. I have such hopes for the future. Because of what I'm confident God is doing and is going to accomplish in the lives of these young people. And we have so much to be grateful for here as a congregation blessed with so many young people. And so many of these young people that are here this morning, we need to continually pray that God will bless them and strengthen them. And it's just amazing to think about when they rise up, when this generation rises up and takes their place, what they can be and what they can accomplish for good in this world and fulfillment of God's purpose and God's calling on their life. I've also been very mindful all this week because of things that have been in the news about the rather unpleasant topic to talk about, the unpleasant topic of abortion. And there are any number of pieces of legislation that are being considered and some being passed in various states that indicate that there are changes taking place, and one of the most encouraging things is there are changes taking place in people's thinking and in people's hearts, and the reality is beginning, I believe, to dawn on the American conscience that this is not a matter of choice, this isn't a matter of a woman's issue or reproductive issues, this is a question about human life and what is and isn't appropriate for those who have strength and power to do to those who are vulnerable and weak. And certainly the unborn are the most vulnerable and weakest among us, and since the passing of Roe versus Wade, some 60 million have been denied the most fundamental and basic human right of all, the right to live, and to live out their lives in the world. And what I'd just ask you to do is to think about that and to pray about that and ask that God would work in people's hearts to raise that sense of awareness and consciousness of what is taking place, what has been taking place in America. I truly believe this is one of those absolutely fundamental issues that if we're really going to go forward as a nation, we have to get this corrected. It's not different in many regards in that way from slavery itself. It was something that simply had at some point to come to an end if there was going to be a future. And this has to, at some point, come to an end if there's going to be a future for us. And people's psyche, people's hearts are so calloused by this kind of practice that something has to give. So let's be praying and thinking and working in any way we can to help that. And while we're at it, remember that there are countless women and young families who are confused, who are desperate, situations find themselves making choices that maybe they deep in their heart know isn't right, but they don't know of any alternatives or opportunities. And if we continue to try to encourage people, reach people with the gospel, a message of hope and life, and do what we can to help shoulder their burden, that's a long way toward helping resolve the problem. Thank you for being here this morning. That's not what we're here to talk about today. I ran across a quote a while back. I forget exactly where I found it. It might have been Eugene Peterson, but it says, "In the life of faith, each person discovers all the elements of a unique and original adventure." And I just love that statement because it speaks to the individuality of each and every one of us and the reality that we do find, every single one of us do find set before us an amazing adventure. And it's an adventure unlike an adventure that anyone else ever has or ever will take. It's your story. It's your adventure. It's your life. It's unique. It's original. And only you have the potential to fulfill that purpose that God had in mind when He created you and gave you life. The Bible teaches us that we are reflections of God's image. That's what human beings are, is a reflector of the glory and the greatness of God manifesting His reality and His presence in the physical world. And God is so great that He can't be reflected fully and properly in the life of only, you know, a few of us. He needs all of us reflecting in our different aspects the greatness and wonder of who God is. And He's given you a particular role to play, a particular life to live out, a particular adventure to undertake in order to manifest His glory in the world. That's a job only you can fulfill. And so I love that statement, and it reminds me of certain difficulties that I think we have in grasping the reality of that. We sort of get into a way of thinking that, well, if we're Christians or if we're people who are faithful to God, then all of our lives are going to look exactly the same. And that's just simply not true. When you go through the scriptures and you start with Adam and you go on to Noah and you go on to Abraham and you go on to Moses and then you get to Elijah and other prophets, you come to the New Testament, you certainly look at the life of Jesus and Peter and Paul and Mary and so many others. What you realize is that though there are certain common themes of their faith and commitment to God to try to walk in that unique path that He has assigned to each of them, you also notice that their lives are just so remarkably different. Every one of them special, every one of them unique, and in some ways just poles apart from the way that another person's life went. And yet God was involved in each and every one of them. And so it's a mistake for us to think of Christianity as sort of a one-size-fits-all suit. I knew of a young man, at least his reasoning for departing from the faith was because he was told as a young person growing up, your granddaddy was a deacon. Your daddy's a deacon. And you're going to be a deacon too when you grow up because we want you to follow the family plan. This is the mold we want you to fit into. Now, I think it's a good thing if a person aspires to that and can become a deacon, become an elder, become a preacher, become a Bible class teacher, or fulfill whatever many other roles there are to fulfill in God's kingdom. But for us to presume upon another person that this is exactly the pattern that your life is supposed to follow creates an expectation on them that may not be God's expectation for that person's life. And another way that we get tripped up in this same regard is in looking around at other people and observing how their life is unfolding and what their relationship to God looks like and wondering why mine doesn't look so good in comparison to theirs. You know, we might feel like my relationship's going okay, but then I look at somebody else's relationship to God and it's different and it seems superior, it seems better than mine, or maybe it just seems like it's an easier walk that they're having down their pathway. And I wonder why mine can't be more like theirs. And soon I become discouraged and downcast and perhaps even walk away from serving God altogether. I think if you look around you to compare yourself with others, you're going to find that life is unfair. And that's a hard thing for us to deal with. But it seems to me from studying Scripture from beginning to end that God's primary consideration and purpose is not to create fairness across the board. I mean, yes, there are certain things that are fair. God offers salvation to all people on exactly the same terms, but our lives are not all even. They are not all the same. Everyone's pathway is not equally smooth or hilly or up or down or whatever it may be. Every one of them is a little bit different. So maybe God's looking for something other than fairness as His ultimate ideal as He tries to set the path before each one of us. Maybe there's something else in mind. There's a story in the New Testament that I think reveals this problem in a powerful, powerful way. It's the story of Peter, and you may recall how Peter, a unique personality in the Bible, had boldly told Jesus before his arrest in the garden that even if all of the other disciples betrayed Jesus, Peter said, I won't. The others may let you down, Jesus, but you can count on old Peter. I'm the rock. You give me that nickname, and it's going to come true. Even if I have to die with you, Lord, you can count on me. I'll be right at your side. But you're familiar enough probably with the Bible to know that the story as it unfolds doesn't go the way Peter expected. I think he intended well, but then when things simply went in a direction that he could never have imagined it going, he found himself at a distance from Jesus, separated from Jesus, which is the first thing he said wasn't going to happen. But then he found himself surrounded at a campfire with some people who seemed to have an opposition to Jesus, and he sort of blended in with the crowd. And pretty soon we find him doing exactly what Jesus predicted. And three times Peter said, I do not know who Jesus is. I do not know the man. And on the third occasion it says he began to curse and swear, I have no relationship with Jesus. You've got the wrong guy. And after that, Luke, I believe it's Luke's account, tells us that Jesus looked across the courtyard as he is in custody and in chains, and Peter's eyes meet his, and we're told that Peter went out. He ran out and wept bitterly. After that, when Jesus was crucified and buried and rose again, he began to make appearances over a 40-day period to his disciples, and Peter, of course, was one of those. And on one of those occasions, Peter and the others had been out in a boat fishing during the night. And when they came ashore, the Lord was there, and he had prepared a fire. And when he arrives, Jesus, you know, has breakfast of fish for the disciples. And after they've eaten a little bit, as I see it in my mind's eye, Peter and Jesus begin to go for a walk along the beach. Do you get that in your mind? Jesus and Peter are walking along the beach. And Jesus begins to ask Peter some questions. He asks him one question, really, over and over again. And it's a powerful, powerful question. He doesn't say, Peter, why did you do it? Peter, what are you going to do about it? He asks Peter the most important question imaginable in those circumstances. You remember what he said? He said, Peter, do you love me? And isn't that the issue? For each and every one of us, as we have to answer that question, say your name. Hear the Lord ask you that question. Do you love me? And Peter answered the first time. He said, Lord, you know that I love you. And Jesus said, I think maybe twisting it a little bit in Peter, he said, do you love me more than these? Because Peter had said, you know, by comparison, Lord, I love you more than all the rest. I'll be there with you even if they aren't. Do you love me more than these? And Peter says, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And then it says a third time, Jesus asked Peter, do you love me? And it says that Peter was hurt. Peter was grieved. Peter was broken. He was wrecked because Jesus asked him the third time, the same number of times he'd denied him, do you love me? And he said, Lord, you know everything, including my heart. And you know that I loved you, even though I didn't act like it. You know I love you. And so Jesus said, okay, I want you to feed my sheep. Not only am I going to forgive you, not only am I going to restore you to a relationship with me, but I'm going to recommission you. I'm going to give you an assignment. I want you to feed my sheep. I want you to tend my flock. I want you to preach and teach and lead those who will fall after me. Can you do that for me, Peter? And then Jesus goes on and tells Peter, you know, when you were a young man, you had your independence and you were able to go and come as you please. But when you grow older, as a result of you fulfilling the commission that I'm now giving you, a time is going to come when they're going to bind you and you're going to reach out your hands and someone else is going to have to clothe you. And then they're going to lead you out to a place that you do not want to go. And then John adds, the writer in chapter 21 of this story, he adds this, that Jesus told Peter that little bit of information to indicate to Peter the way that he was going to die. Apparently there's in that some indication he's going to be led out to execution. Secular history or legend indicates that Peter was crucified upside down. That's a beautiful moment, isn't it? I mean, it's a very touching moment. It's a very personal moment. As Jesus takes the time to isolate himself with one individual disciple and reaffirm their relationship and build him back up and recommission him, and all of that is happening. And I would have to think that in that moment, Peter's feeling all kinds of emotions, but you would think above all else, he's just grateful. I'm just grateful. You had every reason to just cast me off. You took me back in. You had every reason never to trust me again, and you've recommissioned me with this opportunity. And you've sort of indicated that I'm going to live to be an old age, and I'm going to die serving you faithfully. And that ought to just sort of been the beautiful ending moment, but it wasn't. Because here's what John tells us happens next. They're still walking along the beach. And after Jesus had indicated to him the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God, then he said to Peter, "Follow me. That's what you're going to do for the rest of your life." And this is what Peter said. Peter turned. He looked behind him. The two of them were walking together. But Peter turns and looks, and he saw the disciple whom Jesus loved was following them. And when Peter saw him, he asked, "Lord, what about him?" You know the best way to ruin something beautiful? Compare it to something else. So many beautiful things. But when we start thinking, "Oh, this is beautiful, but you know, in comparison to that," all of a sudden this, not so much. And that's exactly what Peter does here. He's having this beautiful moment with the Lord, but all of a sudden he begins to take his eyes off Jesus and he starts looking at other situations and other people, and he's heard about now how difficult his life and his future and how painful perhaps his end is going to be, and all of a sudden he sees John, this disciple whom Jesus loves, and all of a sudden Peter starts to lose his sense of confidence and connection and becomes concerned about Jesus' relationship with another disciple. What about you? What's your "what about him" problem? Are there people that you look at and you think, you know, why is my life not more like her life? Why does God put these rocks in my pathway when this person's pathway seems to be nothing but sunshine and smooth sailing all the way through? I wish I was married to someone like they were married to. I wish I had a job like he had. Why is it that I seem to have all these struggles of doubt and skepticism that just plague me every step of my way through my faith journey? And this other guy over here, it just seems like none of that ever enters his mind. Why is it that my body is racked with pain and disease, and they seem to be healthy and never have a thought and concern? Was my financial situation so crippling, so hard, and so difficult, and somebody else just says what seems to me to be an overabundance? Lord, what about that? You know, all of us have a beautiful life. And what we need to do is just stop comparing that life and that relationship that God has established with us through Jesus and comparing it to anyone else. If we'll just look at it for what it is, if we'll just look and see how far he's come to reconcile himself to me. What a beautiful thing it is that the Lord of glory left heaven to come to earth, to live as a man, to live as a servant among men, to give his life on the cross, not just for the world he did, yes, but for me personally. He's redeemed me. He's restored me. He's given me a place in life. He's put responsibilities in my life. He's put a path before me. And whether it's smooth or hard or difficult or easy or glamorous or simple and plain, it's the one he gave me. And as long as I focus on that, I'll see beauty in it. I'll see glory. I'll see goodness. But as soon as I start comparing that to you and to somebody else, all of a sudden the beauty is going to fade away. In this beautiful moment, Peter says, "What about him?" I love the way Jesus answers. He says, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You follow me. And that's what Jesus would say to every one of us. When we start looking sideways and wondering about this person, that person, and why my life is different than theirs, what is that to you? I gave you your life. I've set this opportunity before you. And if you'll do what I'm asking you to do and you'll follow me, you're going to have everything you need. It's going to be taken care of and it's going to be a beautiful thing. So let's just focus on that. That's what should concern us. What's your story? What has he done for you? What betrayals, what slimy pits has he lifted you up out of? What blessings has he put in your life? What responsibilities has he given you? Those are the things that concern you and that ought to be your attention and ought to be my attention in my life. And what is he calling me to do? It's not the same call for all of us. It's a unique life that each of us are called to live out. And that's what I need to focus on. There's a beautiful passage in Revelation 2. I don't even know what all it means. I'm studying and teaching the book of Revelation, so hopefully when we get to this, I'll have a better idea. But there's just something about this passage that just moves me. It's Jesus speaking to the disciples and the various churches, the seven churches of Asia to whom the letters originally addressed. And he says, talking to those who will live out their life faithfully. And theirs was extraordinarily difficult life and a time of intense persecution. But he says to them, I will give to each one that follows me faithfully, I will give to each one a white stone. And on that stone will be a new name that no one understands except the one who receives it. Isn't that something? I'm going to give to each one of you a special stone, a white stone. It's going to have your name, and it's not just going to necessarily be your given name that everyone knows, but it's going to be a unique name. You know, Jesus nicknamed the disciples, he nicknamed Peter at least, the Rock. That'd be a good name, wouldn't it? The Rock. And he's got a name for you, and he's got a name for me. And if you follow him faithfully, he's going to disclose that name to you, and maybe nobody else will understand the meaning of it. Maybe others will see the name, but they won't know what that means, because nobody knows what it means for you to follow the Lord like you know what it means for you to follow the Lord. I have struggles. I have doubts. I have concerns. I have fears and anxieties that plague me. And there are times I just wonder, why, Lord, do I have this bag of rocks to carry around? And then I just look at what he's done, what he promises. Nobody understands all of that but me, and I don't expect you to understand. I'm not asking for your sympathy. You've got the same thing. Nobody knows but Jesus. But he knows. And that's what makes it so special. It's not that it's fair. It's not that it's the same for everyone. It's because what you've got is yours and yours alone, and it's between you and him. You're a one-of-a-kind addition. Never been anything like you in this world before, and there's never going to be anything like you again. Wouldn't it be a shame for you to spend that one special, unique life that you have wishing that you were somebody else? Be grateful. Keep on moving, and don't ever give up. Well, how do you do that? How do you keep from looking side to side, becoming distracted, and comparing yourself and your life and your relationship to God with everyone else's? I think Hebrews chapter 12 helps a lot. He says, and let us run with endurance the race God has set before us. Each one of us is running a different race. We're not all running the same race. It's a race that, your race that he set before you. You run your race. And you run it with endurance. And here's how you do it. Here's how you keep the endurance up when your strength weakens and when you're tired and you don't know how you're going to take another step. Here's how you do it. You don't do it by looking at somebody else's race. You don't run well and you don't run a race well when you're running like this. You'll never see anybody at an elite level running the 100-meter dash in the Olympics win it by going like this. You run your race with what? With your eyes fixed on what's ahead, and that's the Lord Jesus. That's who we're running to. It's a good thing to talk about going to heaven and that being our goal, but I like to personally think of it a little bit differently. I don't necessarily think of a place. I just think of a person. Because it doesn't really matter to me where heaven is. As long as Jesus is there, that's where I want to be. That's heaven to me. And so I want to keep my eyes fixed on Jesus, the champion, the hero who initiated this whole thing and who brings it to a conclusion, who perfects it. And I see how he ran and blazed the trail before me. He did it with the joy that was set before him. He knew where he was going and he kept his eyes focused on the race that his Father had set out for him. And it was a race unlike anyone else's. He never complained about the particular course set before him. He just ran the one God gave him. And he ran it all the way to the end for the joy that he knew was awaiting him. And so he was able, by virtue of that focused running, to disregard all of the distractions, the shame, and the things that weigh us down. Now he's seated at the right hand of God the Father Almighty. And that's where we're going, and that's where we need to be. So that's where we are this morning. And we're all running our race individually, but we're all kind of running together. I know it's just kind of mixing two weird things together. But we're not competing against each other. That's the idea. We're running in the same direction. We're running at different paces because some of us are able to run and others have to walk and some have to be pushed and limp along. It doesn't matter. As long as you're going, as long as you're moving, as long as you're headed in the right direction, as long as we're all determined, we're not going to let anybody stop moving and just fall to the side because we're not competing. What God expects of me is what God expects of me. What he expects, you know, I'm not here to, you know, judge you and you don't judge me. Let's keep our eyes where they belong and let's just keep running together. Because we're not competing. And one of the saddest things to me is when I hear someone say, and I've heard this kind of thing a number of times through the years, is, well, I just don't want to go to church anymore because I don't measure up. You don't measure up to what? You're not competing. It's not like we take the average of everyone here and that's what you've got to measure up to. You've got to measure up to just running the race God set before you as best you can. As long as you're doing that, we're all pulling for you. It says, well, you know, I don't know all those Bible stories and I go to the classes and everybody else seems to kind of talk over my head and I can't find my place in the scripture and why do I even belong here? Yeah, you belong here. And I just have a hard time keeping myself together the way that I need to be kept together, and I feel like everybody's staring at me. Well, probably not. And even if they are, what's that to you? You follow Jesus. That's our purpose, and that's our plan, and God doesn't care if you look the part or not. Just run your race and play your role. And let's give him all the glory. Well, in Galatians 4, I'll wrap up this morning. In Galatians, the fourth chapter, I don't have this passage on the screen, but it's a favorite passage of mine because it talks about our being made children of God through adoption by Jesus Christ. It's a little complicated, but because of Jesus, the truly one and only, unique, begotten Son of God. Through Him, we can all become the adopted family and children of God. And that means you're a son, you're a daughter of the Father. And when those of you who have been blessed with these new babies recently, when you look at your baby, do you look at your little newborn baby and say, you know, my baby's pretty cute, but I wish my baby was more like their baby. My baby's a good baby. I love my baby, but I love their baby more. If I hear somebody say that, I don't think, man, what's wrong with their baby? I think, what is wrong with the parent? And God loves you. He loves me because I'm His child. And He doesn't love anybody here more than anybody else, because when we were all yet weak and sinners, Christ came to die for the ungodly. And so we're not in a competition to see who can get the most of the Father's love. We all are children of the Father through adoption into His Son, Jesus Christ. And He loves you, and He couldn't love you any more. Just run to Him. And don't ask, what about Him? If you're not a Christian, the first step of that race is to come to Jesus, to come to Him, to realize He's the beginner and the finisher of your race and of the faith. Put your confidence in Him, fix your eyes on Him, and unite yourself with Him in the waters of baptism, and you'll rise up a new creation with a new orientation and a new goal and a new purpose in life. And if you've wandered off course and maybe you've become distracted by looking and wondering about what's going on with everyone else, and you need to get refocused, and you'd like the prayers of the church on your behalf to encourage you, whatever we can do to help, we'd be glad to do that right now while we stand and while we sing.